You're listening to On the Couch with Carly. Carly's couch is a safe space to talk. I'm a psychologist, but I'm not your pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing stereotype.
Hello, and welcome back to On the Couch with Carly. Today's episode is just me, and I want to talk about something that I have spoken about before and written about before. That is something I think is quite particular to myself as an individual and my stance on emotions and I guess my role as a therapist. And that is, I am pro anger. And I really love talking about anger. And when people come to me for therapy and they say, I felt so angry, or I identify that they were feeling angry, I get the feeling that people often are like, no. Anger, no, that's not me. I don't feel angry. Angry's bad, right? Anger is bad. And I'm always so excited to normalize anger for people and to give people the sense that they have legitimacy in their anger, and that anger is something I want to explore. I want to know more about anger. I want to understand your anger, just like I would any other emotion. Because I think people have had such a different experience in their lives up until that point. Now, I'm not talking about people who come to me and saying, I have an anger problem, help me with anger management. I think there are definitely people who rush to anger and probably overuse anger and overuse aggression. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about people who actually feel a lot of shame around their anger, who often don't know what to do with their anger, who come to me feeling they need to fix their anger rather than understand it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about anger and how I understand it. And I'm sure that this has been said elsewhere. I don't feel like I'm inventing something here or bringing any kind of unique insights to the topic. Partly what I'm expressing has been inspired by reading Glennon Doyle's book Untamed, where she talks about emotions and she refers to them as packages, like when you get a package from an e-commerce site that you bought a shopping item from, and then the doorbell rings and there's a package at your door, and that emotions are various packaged items that are for us to open. What is inside the package is the really interesting question. So she talks about emotions as information. I think that's been spoken about elsewhere as well. And that's how I like to think about it, that what you're feeling is your brain's very, very evolved way of letting you know what's going on in your environment internally and externally. And some parts of us are less evolved than others. And that is really the truth of it, that we are incredibly sophisticated in many ways in the world and how we use various tools like technology, very sophisticated. But the way our anatomy has shifted over the course of history and how our brains have evolved is much, much, much slower than how quickly our technology has advanced. And so we are still just really primates to a very large degree. And then there's this sort of very small percentage of our brains that is quite sophisticated and quite competent in higher order processing. So I like to think of us as trying to sort of manage this system, this internal system of ours that is both archaic and rudimentary and simple, but also in a complex world where there are lots of competing demands that we have to make sense of. So this is my theory on anger and what it is delivering. If we had to pay attention to anger rather than immediately recoil and immediately be shamed by just the mere fact that I feel angry, I am bad, if we could choose another option, and instead I say to you, well, what if anger isn't bad? What if anger is just a part of you, a part of your brain's messaging to you? What is it trying to tell you? And I have come up with the idea that there are three things that anger comes to you to tell you. Number one, anger is often what psychologists would call a secondary emotion. So often we feel anger, it's the thing that is on the surface, but inside, underneath that crust of anger, is something gooey and scary and scaredy. It's the more vulnerable emotions underneath that anger. That's actually what we're feeling. And the anger comes in like a protective coating to sort of ward off really threat. It's something in our bodies are saying, I'm not okay. And the anger's like, I'll show you, you're going to be fine. And anger can do that, right? Anger looks big. It's like the emotional version of your hair standing up on the back of your neck. You know, the evolutionary reason for the fact that our hair stands up is to actually make us look bigger. If you look at cats or dogs when they fight, their hair stands up. And the reason for that is it makes them look bigger and more threatening. And so that is a little bit like what anger does. Anger kind of puts on a brave face, right? Puts on a mask that says, I'm tough. I'm a big baddie. This world doesn't scare me. When in actual fact, what you're feeling on the inside is, it's bloody scary. So, as an example, sometimes I talk to people about their in-laws, for example, and someone will say, you know, my mother-in-law just rubs me up the wrong way. She comes in and she gives my children sugar, and I tell her no, and I, or I don't tell her no, but inside I'm feeling like I want to tell her no, and I don't articulate that. And then what ends up happening is I feel small, and I feel like I'm being bullied, like I'm being made to feel, like pushed around. And actually, I'm feeling quite unsafe. And also, I feel like this is bad for my child. I don't want my child to be given sugar. It's going to end up being a bad afternoon because they're going to be in a bad mood and I'm not going to get them to sleep and the sugar winds them up. And, I'm scared. I'm actually scared of the consequences here. And I know this is not good. And, but I'm feeling actually quite small because I don't really have the voice. I'm not voicing. I don't feel powerful in this relationship. I can't say, hey, that's not okay. You can't do that. I've told you I don't like my child eating sugar, but instead I'm swallowing it and I'm feeling quite small. But when I come to therapy, I'm angry. I hate my mother-in-law. She's the worst. And I just wish I could just tell her to back off. And, lots of anger. And when we unpack it, underneath that anger is a sense of helplessness, a sense of, that frustration that comes with being little and not feeling powerful and not feeling impactful and feeling, voiceless, powerless, helpless. Those feelings are very uncomfortable. They're vulnerable feelings. But I don't come to therapy with those feelings, right? I don't show up like that. When I'm talking to my husband about it that evening, I'm not showing up in this helpless, scared, vulnerable way. I'm going, your mother, and blah, 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 and I'm showing in this tough way that I'm angry, but actually something else is going on. Okay, so that's one example. And I think that if you probably, it's hard to say what is the most likely, but I would say probably when it comes to, actually, I can say this. I think men I think that there's a search. I think that one gender in particular, I think that men in particular feel anger in this way a lot of the time. And it's very tricky because they show up with anger. They show up with, this is wrong. And I don't like the way he does this. And they come back from work with these stories about this colleague and that one. And they do this and they do that. Or they come to you as the partner with, you don't get to treat me like that. And all sorts of stuff that's very, if you listen to the language of it, it's all very, I think of anger as like a bouncer character. He's like your bodyguard, He's like, hey, don't touch my man, like, don't touch him. The anger is kind of, you can hear it's very self-protective. So the anger's coming there to say, don't touch me, don't mess with me. But if you just look back a little bit, underneath it all is this feeling of getting pushed around, getting feeling a bit small, feeling a bit underheard, all of those sort of feelings. Small, insecure. Insecure is a big one, right? We sometimes get angry when we're actually feeling insecure. We sometimes feel angry when we're feeling shame. I think I'm one of those people that get to anger when I'm actually feeling shame. So when I feel like I'm being told off, or I'm being told that I'm wrong, or that I'm bad, or that I fucked up, or that I failed, or that I'm flawed in any way, because of course I'm a perfect person. I don't know, perfectionists of the world unite. But any of those situations cause me to actually rise in anger. What I'm feeling underneath the anger is actually shame. And it's much more vulnerable. It's much more vulnerable. If I was honest when I felt shame, I would say, oh, but like feeling yucky. I don't feeling imperfect. Ooh, I'm so wretched. That's actually what I'm feeling. But what I show is anger. Hey, you don't talk to me like that, So that's the one thing that anger does. And I think we could probably all relate to that, but it takes a little bit of digging to get there, And then we've got to be comfortable with that vulnerable feeling. So if you're not comfortable with me yet, or you're not comfortable with your partner to actually like address those more uncomfortable, vulnerable feelings, you're going to stick with anger. So we've got to create that safety in relationships to say, what's underneath? And it's okay. I can hold this. I can be here with you while you express this hard thing. What was happening for you? And so one really important question that you can ask, if you think someone is expressing anger in a moment of actually feeling vulnerable, or if you have identified that you are feeling angry and you're like, I wonder why I'm feeling angry. One question you can ask then is say, you can say to yourself, what is hard for you about this moment? That's the question to access the vulnerable feelings. What is hard for you about this? Why is this so hard for you? And that can then lead to the more vulnerable feelings. Okay. So, second way that we feel anger, or the reason we feel anger, is, and I think this is a big one for women in particular, and I see a lot of this with my mums that I see in therapy, and there is a huge body of literature about maternal, or what they call mom rage, maternal rage, mom rage. It's a big theme in postpartum experiences, so matrescence. And it can be pathologized, right? So it can be something we need to like medicate. Maternal rage is a symptom of postpartum depression and anxiety. Therefore, medicate, get rid of it. I would be more curious about it. I'd be saying, what is the meaning of this maternal rage? So yes, it can be what I've just discussed in example A of it's a more vulnerable experience that I can't actually say because I don't feel safe. I don't feel held, and so I'm showing you anger because I don't know how to be vulnerable in this moment. I don't know how to express these vulnerable feelings. Okay, that's one in the context of maternal or mom rage. But I see in my practice that this is that number two, example two, is the big theme for moms and for women in general, and that is we feel angry when our boundaries have been violated. Or put another way, when our needs that we have expressed do not get met. So it can be slightly different. It's a bit of a nuance there, but I like to call it just boundaries just to make it clearer. Now let's use the mother-in-law example again. Okay, so we've got mother-in-law. She gives your kid chocolate. Now let's say you did actually find your voice and you said, please, mother-in-law, we don't give ch our children chocolate. Please don't give my children chocolate anymore. And you have maybe said this a few times and you maybe made it very clear and you've got, you feel like you have made your boundary clear. And then you see your mother-in-law giving your child chocolate. And in that moment, your anger is an anger that is different from being vulnerable in that moment and using anger to protect. That anger is actually the anger that you feel, and I think rightfully so, when you have been pushed past your limit. Now, unfortunately, maternal rage doesn't just show up in these sort of neat examples where you've said, no, you may not do this, and then someone does it. Or at least it may not be so clear that you had articulated the boundary, or it may not be so clear that the person is unable to respect you in that moment. Because being a mom is tricky because we do give boundaries to our children and they do push our boundaries kind of all the time. It's almost their job to push our boundaries. So that's when it becomes quite tricky because the maternal rage that we feel can sometimes be about our children. And it can sometimes be about almost like an overload of that system. Because let's be honest, the first time our boundaries get pushed down, we go, no. That's a boundary. We claim that boundary, assert ourselves, we show up and we communicate, and it's fine. But sometimes what happens is we've done that maybe 10 times in a day, and it's that 11th moment that happens sometime between 4 p.m. and 10 p.m. or 4 p.m. and 8 p.m., where in that 11th moment of the day where someone just pushed you or did something that just feels like, does no one listen to me? Does no one respect me? That it just takes you over the limit. And so I think that's a really important thing to acknowledge in yourself is, am I communicating my boundaries clearly? Am I holding my boundaries properly? Because I think sometimes we think that all we have to do is say what the boundary is or what the limit is. So let's say it's children, stop jumping on the couch, stop jumping on the couch, stop jumping on the couch. Like that's not enough. That's not enough of a boundary. That's not us really showing up for ourselves and asserting our own boundary. If this is a boundary, if this is something I really believe in, then I've got to physically say to my children, if you don't stop jumping on the couch, I'm going to take you and I'm going to put you down, or I'm going to move you into a different room, or we're going to go somewhere else. And you've actually got to physically move your child off the couch. That is actually a boundary, is what you do with your body to maintain that integrity that you have for yourself. That you stand up for what you want and what you need in that moment. Okay. So sometimes we have to work on how we articulate boundaries, how we assert boundaries, how we maintain boundaries. But sometimes there are just people in the world that are rudely stepping over our boundaries. And it's very upsetting. And we feel very upset by that. And so I would say to my clients in those moments, it's okay to feel angry. You are right to feel angry. That is exactly what you should be feeling when someone pushes over your boundary. That's rude and disrespectful, And so I don't condone that you would then flip out and scream and shout and hurt the other person's feelings or physically even hurt them. Absolutely not. That's not the point of this, because remember, anger does not equal aggression. They're not the same thing. You can be angry and not be physically aggressive or verbally aggressive. But I'm here to be with that anger. I'm here to say that anger is valid. Your anger is valid. And in moments when I'm not there, can you identify for yourself that you were angry for a reason, that this reason is valid? And then you need to ask yourself, okay, well, what needs to be done differently? Do I need to assert this boundary in a different way? Or do I need to ask for support around asserting this boundary? You know, if mom-in-law isn't getting it, do I need my partner to really read her the right act? You know, like, is that what's required?
Bringing a baby home isn't just about nappies and night feeds. It changes everything: your identity, your relationships, even your career. If you're expecting a baby or recently became a parent, my online course, Oh Baby, WTF, is for you. It's not your typical antenatal class. It goes deeper into the real, often messy experience of becoming a parent. You'll explore the four big spheres that shift when a baby arrives: who you are, your partnership, your community, and your work life. And you'll walk away with a practical mental health toolkit to help you through those "what just happened" moments. All online, self-paced, honest, real, and actually helpful. Ready to feel more prepared for everything that comes with a new baby? Head to onthecouchwithcarly.com to find out more and sign up for Oh Baby WTF today.
That's a very important one. And I just want to give another example, and that is around self-care. So I think boundaries and self-care are interlinked. I think that when we take time for ourselves, and I don't mean self-care like doing your nails and doing your hair, although that can constitute self-care. What I mean by self-care is knowing that you as a person matter and that all of your relationships matter too, and you do have to do what you need to do to meet other people's needs, but not at the expense of yourself. And if you feel that it is at the expense of yourself, then you have to carve out time to spend with yourself to replenish, to give back to yourself, to refuel yourself, you know, the old thing of fill up your own cup, because you cannot keep pouring out in it, you know, indefinitely without refueling, without replenishing. So I always say to people who are struggling with their anger, I say, how is your self-care? Are you actually taking time for yourself? Do you have a set time in the week that you do you and it's got nothing to do with anyone else and no one interferes with that? You know? And do you hold that? Do you hold your own boundaries around that? Because that's also super interesting, is that we can sometimes be the person that pushes down the boundaries that we have created. And that is so interesting. We need to think about that. We need to explore boundaries in more ways than just something between me and another person. So if I am not even holding my own boundaries and I push down, you know, I say to myself, right, you're going to exercise on Mondays and Wednesdays from 9 till 10. If I suddenly decide, you know, oh, that kid needs that thing done, my husband needs this done, do I just forgo the exercise today because other people are needing things from me? I am actually showing up in my own relationship with myself in a way that is disrespecting my own boundaries. And so that self-care boundary relationship is quite interesting and I think something to be explored. And so I look back, when people come to me and they say, I was angry, I blew up, I did this thing, I feel so guilty. We track back and we go, okay, what happened before that? What happened before that? What happened before that? And what happened before that? And I promise you, 10 times out of 10, when I'm working with people, we get to the moment where there was a moment where either I said to myself, I can't do this anymore. This is too much for me. I'm not okay. I need a break. I need to stop. And I pushed past. I carried on doing. I carried on meeting people's needs. I carried on offering. I carried on, you know, saying yes to things when I should have said no, when I should have taken time out for myself. So that's the one thing we always find. Or we find a situation where you had not communicated your boundaries properly, or you had said, I need something, and someone who was supposed to show up for you and help you in that moment bailed, didn't show up. You know, like they, I don't know, let's think of an example. Let's say you've decided, okay, I need help in the evenings with the kids. And you said to your partner, you need to be home by 5 p.m. Please be home by 5 p.m. so that we can do bath time and bedtime together. And on the day that your partner sends you a message late and says, oh, I'm so sorry, I've got something that's taken too long and now I'm only going to be home at 6. Surprise, surprise, that's the day you blow up at your kids in the bath, right? It's not unconnected, right? There's a link there. Someone didn't show up for me when I needed them. And that was that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Like I was coping and I would have coped, but I couldn't cope any longer because I needed someone to show up for me in that moment. And I needed you to hold that boundary for me. And it didn't work out like that. And of course, shit happens. People are not perfect. People disappoint us. So it's not that they're wrong or this is now a crime that they've done that, but it's to understand then why you felt angry. It didn't just come out of nowhere. You're not just a bad person. You didn't just do something bad and need to be punished for it. You are a person in relationship to your roles and responsibilities and to yourself and to other people. And th there was a reason. There was meaning for that anger. The anger had meaning, and you can track back and say, right, I think it was this moment that caused the breakdown in my ability to kind of hold my shit together because I needed support and I'd communicated that. So, I hope that you're hearing from me that this is not about sort of adjudicating blame, assigning blame. We don't, that's not the point of therapy. You don't come to me so that we can be like, well, you see, it's all your husband's fault because you didn't come home when he said he was supposed to. It's not that. It's just about recognizing that you're a person and these experiences that you have meaning. And so in that moment, I would say, well, that's understandable then, that's why it happened. And of course, if it's understandable and if I understand it and if you understand it, then maybe we can also forgive it. We can say, well, that sucks for you. And I'm sorry that happened. And that's why it was so hard in that moment to hold your shit together. And, we can understand you. We can make meaning of it. It's not random. You're not just a bad person. Okay. So that's example two. I think I've explained that enough. The third way that I think we feel anger, and yeah, it's this is this might not be entirely separate from the boundary stuff. It might not be entirely separate from the vulnerable feeling stuff. So number three is almost, it's not necessarily mutually exclusive from the first two examples, but I find that it's necessary to say because I think maybe because I'm like, I have a little bit of a social justice bent myself. And I kind of, yeah, I mean, my politics are such that I get worked up about injustice in the world. So I do believe that we also feel anger, that what I call righteous anger. And I don't like that word so much because I really hate self-righteous people. Oh, I shouldn't say hate self-righteous people. I don't hate anyone, but I really get the ick from people who consider themselves right. And often people who are self-righteous are quite judgmental and shaming of other people and their choices because if you think you're right, then everyone's wrong. And I don't like that. So when I say righteous anger, I mean something very specific. I mean, like in the way that like I have been mandated as a clinical psychologist to know the laws of this country with regards to, for example, child protection. So as a psychologist, I have to know the Children's Act in South Africa, and I am actually a guardian of that act. It's legal. It's a legal requirement that I have to uphold that legal system, which is that there is in our constitution in this country, we have to protect the rights of children, and we have to make sure that we don't let children come into harm's way. And so, to that end, if I hear about a child being harmed in one of my sessions, I say to all my clients when they start with me, I say, your confidentiality is of utmost importance. I keep your information protected at from everyone and at all costs. However, if I hear of a child being harmed, I have to take that seriously, and I will sometimes privilege that over your confidentiality. Meaning, I won't necessarily say everything about you, but if I hear of a child being harmed, I may have to report that to the social services, to the Department of Social Development, because I have to protect children's rights. And that kind of black and white experience of what is right and wrong is what I'm talking about when I say righteous anger. So sometimes we feel anger when we see something happening in the world that in our gut we know feels wrong. It is an injustice. And people have various ways in which this gets triggered, right? So various wars and conflicts in the world that we have currently today, like Israel, Palestine, there is something visceral that happens in our bodies when we see children being harmed in a war zone, that we feel anger in that moment. We feel anger. Now, does that mean that we're not sh like example one, feeling anger because there's actually a more vulnerable feeling there? Sure, we might be feeling scared. We might be feeling helpless. Sure. So I'm not saying it's mutually exclusive from one and two. Does it feel like it is possible that a boundary was violated in that moment? Sure. You know, if I have said that this is what I believe and I don't want to stand for this, and then it happens, it can feel like that is an injustice and a boundary violation. So the mother-in-law example, right? You felt that was a boundary violation, but also you believe that children getting sugar is wrong. You know, you feel like that's bad for them and you have a sense of this is injustice. It's not quite to the same degree that I'm talking about. So the third example is really I really put it aside for people that are like activists, people that come to my sessions in my therapy and my therapy room and talk about racism. It's a big one, especially in South Africa. You know, there's something so powerful about experiencing racism. Sometimes I mean, I'm a white person, so I don't experience racism towards me, but sometimes I experience racism that is, where black people are being treated unfairly. And it's not that it's happening to me, but I'm witnessing it and it makes me so angry. Sometimes it's sexism. So when women are being mistreated or excluded from something, where we are being positioned as inferior, as, where we have less access to something simply because we're women, where we're made to feel less valuable, less worthy just because we're women. You know, these things can be incredibly triggering of anger. And if you come to me and you tell me I'm feeling angry and this is what I'm angry about, there is no way in hell that I'm going to say to you, oh, we really need to sort out that anger problem, right? Like, that's not a problem. You are feeling angry for a very good reason. And your anger is a very clear message that I think you need to pay attention to, that it's, and in our world, people really struggle with this kind of anger. People really struggle with it, particularly the people in power and in privileged positions. You know, there's this awful trope of like the angry black woman, but it's black women who face the most oppression and the most marginalized in our societies, you know? So this is what I find unfair, is that there's actually you're right to feel angry. You should show up in anger. How are you supposed to protest these massive systems that are oppressive and are unjust and unequal and causing so much harm and devastation? How are you supposed to, comment on these systems politely and, calmly and with no emotion in your voice? You know, why? Why can't we have emotion about things that really matter? So I think in those situations, anger is a wonderful force of It moves us into what it towards what is right, what is better. And so, yeah, that's the third type. Talking about what anger does, I think this is a really important thing, which is often people are like, what do I do with my anger? And I think, great, Carly, you've given us these three reasons why, and these three reasons to explain anger. Now we understand why we feel angry. Now we maybe understand the nuance of our anger. We maybe understand the texture of our anger a bit better. We can even just spend some time knowing our anger. And I think that's honestly 90% of the job. Like literally, if all you do is understand your anger better, you're doing a lot. You're doing a lot. That is emotional processing. That is emotional reflection, re regulation. Is it saying, right, I feel angry for these reasons. But my clients will always say to me, but what do we do with the anger? So anger is a movement emotion, right? There is something to be done with anger. And I think actually the reason why people ask what must I do with this anger is because anger makes us feel like we need to do something. It's sort of hot and energetic. It kind of comes into our bodies in like a force, it's there's energy, there's movement, and it sort of propels us towards something. And so if we say, look, we don't want to choose aggression, we don't want to choose violence, we don't want to take our anger out on people in an unnecessary, pointless, harmful way, which is exactly right. We don't want to. So what do we do with that anger that is constructive? So I will say various things. One thing I say to people is movement. Using your anger and physically doing something is super important. So whether it is writing something down, so sometimes all I need to do is just write when I'm angry. Sometimes I will voice note myself and just say, this is what I'm feeling. Before. Sometimes I'll speak to a friend and I'll just blah it all out. Sometimes I'll speak to my therapist, and even the action of talking it out is action. It's movement. It's moving that energy. It's not stuck inside me anymore. I get to voice it. But sometimes it needs more than that. It needs to go for a big run. It needs physical exercise. It needs my muscles to pump more blood. It needs to, that fight or flight sort of response sometimes requires, to get up, get it out. Same with anxiety. Anxiety also loves movement. We really feel better when we're moving, when we're in motion. So I will say, what do you do for movement? And if you don't do anything, then that's problematic because you're not going to move, have your emotions move through you and kind of, transform. They're going to stay. So I would encourage you to come to kind of go back to whatever practice it is that you have or find a new practice of movement, whether it is, formal exercise or whatever it is. But I think, the good old-fashioned punching bag is wonderful. So boxing, kickboxing, all those sort of tension release activities. Sometimes it's screaming into a pillow. Sometimes it's punching your pillow. Sometimes it's breaking things. These places now where you can go and smash things. I can't remember what the word is, but they exist where you are physically showing that your feelings, your this feeling inside of you has a result in the world. And then I think the other thing to say is that there has to be an external result in the world. So let's go to example one. If I identify that my feelings are that I actually am feeling a bit vulnerable and there's something else going on, then I need to be asking for support. I need to be asking for protection. So do I need more help? Do I need someone to listen to me? Do I need more understanding? Do I need some care, right? Do I need comfort? Those are things I need. So I then have to articulate that. I need to go get that out in the world. That's what number one requires. Number two, the boundaries need to be upheld better. I need to assert my boundaries better. I need to hold my boundaries better. Am I breaking my own boundaries? Do I need to be better at self-care? These are things I need to do in the world. So the anger has a response in the outside world. I do something with my body to manage my anger. And number three, when I'm seeing injustice in the world, what am I doing about it? And of course, I can't necessarily change the war in Israel. in Palestine. I can't necessarily make all children stop being harmed out in the world. I can't stop racism. But what can I do that makes me feel like I'm doing something? Because that's all you have to do. You just have to do something. So can I feel like I'm doing something? And it might be different for you. It's going to be different for you and for anyone else. Everybody's going to have their own thing. But I encourage you to find what that is, that action that gives you that sense of, I'm not just angry for no purpose. I can feel anger and then I can do something with it. Okay, that's enough for me today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please send me your feedback. I'd love to hear from you. As you can see, I'm quite activated when I talk about anger. It's a passion of mine. It's something that I really enjoy discussing. And yeah, I hope you've enjoyed this. So let's speak soon. I'll see you back on the couch again. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to On the Couch with Carly. If something in this episode resonated with you or made you feel less alone, that means the world to me. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and now in video format on YouTube. For exclusive content and resources, visit our website at onthecouchwithcarly.com. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please consider leaving a rating or review. It really does help others discover our safe space for authentic conversation. Until next time, please take good care of yourself. I can't wait to be back on the couch with you again.